me. I got a cool disposition, but I'm a predator. Leave the oceans alone, cause yo, it's better to swim with swordfish. They gon' beat with all this. You can't overhaul this. The only thing you can call this is too virtuous on the wheel of fame. If it came from my lips, you can bet that I meant it. This is my version of how it must go. I bring a real dope flow with new gusto. This game was so weak, needed a shot in the arm. Some West Indian flavor, Caribbean charm.
Hi everyone, welcome to Matthew and Friends. I'm Susie Ward, Matthew's mother. The story of our collaborative Heaven and Earth Spiritual Information Service is on my site, which is www.matthewbooks.com, and also the Matthew and Friends section of the BBS radio site. If you are familiar with the books and Matthew's messages, you know that for many years, he and others in spirit and in physical world have been telling us that the time is coming when the truth about our space brothers and sisters will finally become publicly known. Some of them are living among us, others are living in the hollow earth, and millions are surrounding our planet in spaceships. It will be a momentous day when all of them identify themselves and we know and take our rightful place as members of our universal family. A few visionaries who know that day is coming are laying the groundwork for our cooperative relationship with other civilizations. Those off-planet messengers also have told us that the truth will come out about the terrorist act commonly known as 9/11. And the truth is, members of our government and others were the planners and perpetrators of that tragedy that was used as justification for President Bush to declare the war on terror that led to the invasion of Afghanistan and then Iraq, and all the legislation and executive orders that have curtailed human and constitutional rights. We are so very fortunate that our guest today is both a visionary about a cooperative government with other civilizations and a truth bringer about 9/11. Alfred Weber is an international attorney, author, lecturer, and the founder of Exopolitics. Exopolitics is the movement whose objective is to establish intergalactic politics, government, and law. His public affairs radio program, Exopolitics Radio, is cutting-edge information about relations with advanced extraterrestrial civilizations. Alfred also is a member of the Pro Tem Committee of the Citizens International War Crimes Tribunal. The tribunal's objective is to bring to justice individuals who have committed crimes against humanity, including those who are responsible for the 9/11 tragedy. Before I introduce Alfred, I want to give you the toll-free numbers so you can call to ask him questions or comment on his information. The number in the United States is 877-876-5227. And in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. In about half an hour, we'll take a break for your calls. Don't be shy about calling in. And now, Alfred, hello, and what an honor to greet you. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, Susie, you know, I'm very, very honored myself, and it's so unusual to be able to be with you in this space and in this arena where we can talk with such breadth, ranging from this moment dealing with extraterrestrial civilizations, dealing with universe society, dealing with our multi-dimensional universe on the one hand, and then dealing with bringing to public light, and I guess the word would be deconditioning humanity from this consensual trance that it's been put into as a result of the what we call false flag operation of 9/11. In whose name so many war crimes have been committed, and it's just very unusual. As a communicator, I can say that one can speak openly about so many different facets in one single place, and so I'm very grateful for you for creating that.
Well, Alfred, you are a rare individual to have to wear these two hats, so to speak, of really the two most vital issues that are facing humanity today. And I know that you are eminently well qualified to do this. Would you please mention your background? And what inspired you to undertake these two huge, critically important movements?
Well, professionally, I'm the international director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space, and that was founded actually in 1982 at the UN Outer Space Conference, where Dr. Carol Ross and my co-director and Sir Arthur Clarke and myself first met. And out of that came a vision to create an institute which would have as its mission number one, promoting the peaceful uses of outer space. Number two, preventing the weaponization of space. And number three, promoting cooperation amongst life form in the universe. So that's kind of one track which has gone forward. The other track of my life has been spent as an advocate. And I go back to the late 60s, where I was a cooperating attorney for the Civil Liberties Union. I was of counsel in the Panther 21 trial in New York in 1969. Many of you may remember that's when the FBI framed 21 members of the Black Panther Party, which were really seeking to provide support to the oppressed African American community, and I defended a member of the SDS, the Students for Democratic Society, there, and that's when I really became face to face, also as a member of the Vietnam generation, with the false flag world. Vietnam was a war that was started by a false flag operation, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. And this has all since come to public light, where essentially there was a fake attack, where the U.S. destroyers Maddox and Turner Joy in 1964, there was just a false report that they had been attacked by North Vietnamese gunboats, which was absolutely false. It was a complete fabrication. President Lyndon Johnson knew that when he did that. The Navy knew that when they did that. And he went to President Johnson in utter fabrication and falsehood, went to the well of the U.S. Congress and brought a resolution and declared war. And as a result of that, 50,000 U.S. soldiers died. whole generation of around the world were displaced. 10 million Southeast Asian people died, untold suffering, and ecological damage was brought to Southeast Asia because of those essential lies brought by the permanent war economy in as personified by humans in the form of the Rockefeller interests, very identifiable humans. We call them an International War Crimes Racketeering Organization. In North America, they can be identified by the Rockefeller interest. Many people know the Council of Foreign Relations. Many people know the Trilateral Commission. Many people know the an organization whose secret name is the Brotherhood of Death. It's known by in a surface way as the Skull and Bone Society, which is a secret society at the university that I got my undergraduate degree in, got my law degree in, and that I taught in the economics department there. And I was not a member of the Skull and Bones secret society when I was an undergraduate. I was a member of what they call an underground secret society called Torch and Talon, whereby we just rented a beach house and sat around and did encounter groups. This was the early 60s. But the same group of individuals that were behind the smuggling of opium from India into China in the 1830s as part of the Opium Wars, that was chartered by the founders of Skull and Bones, starting the permanent war economy and its relationship to the top three industries of the permanent war economy, which are oil, drugs, and arms. Those networks can be traced forward to World War One, which was the Rockefeller interest, John D. Rockefeller, made an enormous amount of money, and I think it's valued at, he made $1 trillion. It's been estimated, out of World War One, and this is a manipulated war for profit, and the untold harm that came out of that. See, war to the permanent war economy is an industry, and it's done by manipulating both sides in the Hegelian dialectic of war. Once you control both sides of the dialectic, both sides of the enemies, and you just pit them against each other, well, then you make your money off of the money that both sides have to spend on arms, the taxes that they have to raise, the loans that they have to take from the banks. And so the European end of this is based in London, and it's based in a quasi-independent jurisdiction called the City of London, which is a 677-acre jurisdiction at the heart of London, which even the Queen of England has to request protocol formal permission to end under very, very strict protocols. And her, when she goes into the City of London formally, her retinue is severely restricted. And the Committee of London, the City of London, is ruled by a committee of 12 banks, and all of these are under the control of the House of Rothschild, which has, whose net worth reliably estimated is $100 trillion. And that's set out in some very rigorous reports. And the Rockefellers really got started, John D. Rockefeller, as agents for the Rothschilds, and that's where they made their fortune. And that's how they continue to function. So, in a way, if we look at what you just described earlier, ourselves, if we take our 6 billion plus humans as kind of the salt of the earth, and we have extraterrestrial civilizations, both inside the earth and amongst us, and upper dimensional ethical civilizations surrounding us, the force that is attempting to continue an embargo and a separation amongst all of these takes on human form in terms of the permanent war economy and in terms of this international war crimes racketeering organization through the Rothschild interests. In Europe, it's through the Bilderberger interests, which was a committee formed in 1954. The inner committees, and all of these are interlocking because the Bilderberger committees were formed by the Rockefellers, by the by what we call the black nobility of Europe, which includes Prince Bernard of Holland. And all of these were oriented toward toward a depopulation of the human race. That is a deliberate reduction of the population of the human race by between one-third and two-thirds for the purpose of concentrating wealth upwards and for the purpose of bringing out a new model on Earth, and that is devolving the bulk of humanity back into a slave status, whereby our human potential would be limited under sort of a ruling elite, a dark, black magic-oriented ruling elite. And that model is the model that is reflected in the ongoing struggle between the forces, I would say, of the Galactic Federation, which reflect the advanced upper dimensional extraterrestrial civilization, the advanced civilizations within the Earth, the advanced civilizations amongst us, and those forces on Earth that want to limit our potential and that want to continue an embargo. Quite simply, 9/11 was a false flag operation that occurred at many different levels. At one level, sort of the geopolitical level, which you can explain to any political scientist, that is within a typical academic third-dimensional environment, you can say, oh, well, the reasons for 9/11, as you explained, Susie, at the opening, was to provide a pretext for genocidal and ecocidal depleted uranium bombing of Central Asia in Afghanistan and Iraq, in order to secure vast oil and uranium reserves. In other words, if you take a mineral map of the world, the Islamic civilizations are sitting on tremendous uranium and petroleum reserves. And so the permanent war economy, this Anglo-American Zionist, by Zionist I mean not a religious, but I mean a City of London, House of Rothschild reference. And that is the City of London as a single most powerful jurisdiction on the planet, worth $100 trillion, and through acting through an international war crimes racketeering organization, it carries out a genocidal, racist program, essentially directed toward devolving the human race into a slave status and limiting its cosmic potential and its cosmic citizenship, and maintaining a truth embargo vis-a-vis the rest of advanced extraterrestrial civilization. Well, one means by which this was carried out was to create a mock attack, to fake an attack upon the United States by actual forces of the United States and others. And that allowed then the U.S. to go forward to attack the putative or the supposed homeland of the terrorists, quote unquote, of the hijackers that had attacked the U.S. In fact, the objective was to bomb both Afghanistan and Iraq with depleted uranium weapons in order to depopulate and denude that area of a human population in order to ensure that the uranium reserves of Afghanistan and the petroleum reserves of Iraq and Central Asia would devolve into the hands of the Anglo-American Zionist Empire led by the City of London. This is very, very, very Machiavellian and very unevolved sort of terrestrial warfare. Another reason for the 9/11 black false flag operation was to roll out a terror-based national security state system worldwide. In other words, as you stated, the war on terror. Well, what they rolled out in North America, for example, is a matrix, a martial law matrix of laws and legislation permitting martial law, which is the definition of martial law is military government, and the taking away of all civil liberties as guaranteed under the Bill of Rights and under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in the Canadian Constitution. And the purpose of this is to begin to enforce the slave status. And this is in the context of implementing a world depopulation policy. And finally, to attempt to trigger a World War III conflagration for the permanent war economy, wars are their industrial activity. For example, a shoe company makes shoes. A car company makes cars. The permanent war economy makes wars. That's how it makes its money. That's its product. And World War III would have multiple purposes. A, that's how they make their money. And B, that implements the world depopulation policy. Because a World War III, if it did occur, would be a nuclear war and would result in vast depopulation of the world. All of this was intended to come about by the false flag operation of 9/11, so that 9/11 paradoxically was an attempt by the permanent war economy to use very advanced technology, very advanced quantum technology in the planning of 9/11. In fact, technology that the permanent war economy had acquired from extraterrestrial sources and that was misapplied in planning the events of 9/11. So some of the more advanced models that are beginning to come out about 9/11 now are that, number one, the entire operation, which took about 2 hours, you know, in all of its sites. There was a site in New York at the World Trade Center. There was a site in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon. And there was a site in Pennsylvania. And it appears as though, from the more advanced evidence that's coming out, that 80% of the mass of the Pentagon may have been transformed into nanoparticles almost instantaneously as a result of very advanced molecular disassociation weapons. These are advanced directed energy weapons, which we in the Institute for Cooperation in Space are very familiar with, because directed energy weapons are the preferred space weapon, and they've been under development for at least the last 50 or 60 years. There was also a use of what is called future combat systems. In other words, where a military operation such as 9/11 is planned almost as a movie, almost as a fiction, and it's fed to the world. If you look at 9/11, it was planned as a terrorist attack on the U.S., when in fact it was a very advanced attack using the most advanced weapons of attack on the U.S., with a major component of the attack actually being not in the military, but in the media. There are tremendous analyses online, and I would urge people to look at a number of these films, like September Clues and others, which lay out the fact that there was editing of the actual news footage that people saw on air at the time, to make it appear as though airplanes were striking the Twin Towers, when in fact no airplanes may in fact have struck the Twin Towers. In fact, it was the whole false flag operation of 9/11 could not have transpired without the complete control and complicity of the major media and specific film and other and video editors and specific executives and specific on-camera people who helped script and carry out what was a great act of deception and of mass hypnosis. And at the bottom of it, the way that this 9/11 relates to the extraterrestrial presence is that you can look at 9/11 as an attempt by the permanent war economy or by the occupying terrestrial forces, the dark forces, using their most advanced technology to throw the population of the planet into chaos and fear, thereby cutting off their ability to develop themselves into their higher potential, thereby cutting off their ability to reach out and seek the interactive help of extraterrestrial civilizations in the evolution of the planet, and to throw the human population into chaos and war. And so 9/11 was really, in a way, a strategic weapon used by the permanent war economy, by the terrestrial forces, by this International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, as an attack upon universe society, and as an attack upon our human civilizations developing relationship with our cosmic cousins who are here to help us.
Alfred, thank you. That was a marvelous explanation of going back into history and bringing it forward to show that really this is a two-edged sword that the dark ones are using against us by denying the presence of extraterrestrials. And of course, what they want to do is prevent us from knowing about the extraterrestrials in the light, as well as the dark ones, and also how they are keeping our civilization, and have been for so long, in a trance, as you say. We have this feeling, we just accept it, that war is ongoing, that war is the way to peace. And I so agree with you about the complicity of the media. Of course, they are controlled by the dark ones, so we really should not expect to get much truth from major media. And I am so grateful that you explained that so clearly, and the various steps, specifying some of the false flag operations that have led us into various wars, and showing how this is continuing today. I just want to interject this to even more strongly make your point that there are the benevolent extraterrestrials who are working with us against the dark ones. And because of this, and because light always is more powerful than dark, light exposes the dark, that there will not be a third world war, a nuclear war, and that the plans of the dark ones who are right here among us, whether they are extraterrestrial or our own humankind, will never come to fruition. I'm going to see if there are any callers, first of all, because you gave so much information to ponder there, and then we will pick this up again. Are there any callers? Seth or Don? Okay, I found out that there are no callers. I suspect that our listeners are trying to assimilate everything you said, Alfred. Would you please explain why it was necessary to establish the tribunal, the Citizens International War Crimes Tribunal? Perhaps you could confirm my understanding that ordinarily these criminals would be tried in the World Court in The Hague, but that would be just a farce because the World Court is part of the darkness. Am I correct in that?
Well, yes, this is where the onion becomes, you know, there are all these layers to the onion.
Oh, yes.
And it's very interesting to walk down these layers. And I think that everyone can remember just as a generation earlier, we all remembered when we first heard the news that President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. We can all remember the news when we first heard of the false flag operation of 9/11. It's just a moment that stays in the consciousness of a great mass of people, and in fact, the false flag operation is designed to be this. And I'm deliberately not saying when CNN showed the planes hitting the Twin Towers, because it can now be established that that film of planes hitting the Twin Towers is in fact doctored film. What you're seeing is pixels of an artificial plane hitting the Twin Towers. You're not seeing something that's real. That is, there's good evidence of that. I don't want to speak so categorically. The way that the 9/11 Citizens Tribunal arose is this way. And let me just say for a moment a word about natural law. Natural law in jurisprudence can be called the foundation of all law. For example, justice has an independent existence in nature. There is justice on Earth. There's justice on the Moon. There's justice on Alpha Centauri. Justice is as much a part of the natural laws, of the workings of the universe, as the laws of time, as the laws of light, as the laws of physics. And the question of whether there are just human laws or just courts, or whether justice is ever done, or whether justice catches up with a criminal, that is a question as to whether we humans, in fact, how much we can apply the principle of justice in our dimension, in our affairs. So that's how the principle of justice works. And so what we're facing now on the planet is a time when universal law, which in some sense works impersonally, you know, as they say, you can't break the law, you can only break yourself against the law, i.e., the law has an independent, impartial existence in the same way that the law of gravity has an independent, impartial existence. Now, people can embrace certain aspects of the law of gravity and learn how to levitate, people, you know, can come up to more elevated concepts of the concept of justice. But what we're facing in the issue of 9/11 is a profound example of universal justice. And when I mean by universal justice, I mean, you know, issues of national and constitutional criminality, issues of international law, issues of galactic law, are all being raised by this. And so after the false flag operation of 9/11 occurred, a lot of research occurred. And the first thing that came up for us, and I gathered up experts in the 9/11 field, and because it seemed to me that if we look at Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, and that is Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution is the article that defines treason. Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Sub 3, says, "Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, levying war against the United States, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort." And so, as soon as one starts researching the false flag operation of 9/11 and looking at the various roles and what the evidence shows that the roles that President George W. Bush, U.S. President, Vice President Richard B. Cheney, and U.S. Secretary of Defense, then U.S. Secretary of Defense, Donald H. Rumsfeld, played, it all begins to see that from their office, that false flag operation could not have occurred but for their abuse of their executive privilege, of their executive powers. If they had exercised their executive powers as president, vice president, and secretary of defense, that false flag operation could not have occurred once you get into the facts. And so what came out of that initially was the September 11th Treason Independent Prosecutor Act. And what that act did, or does, is it appoints an independent prosecutor to prosecute treason against the United States by then-President George Bush, Vice President Richard Cheney, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and, quote, other John and Jane Does. Now, all of the individuals, that could be a cast of thousands, who have criminal culpability for planning and carrying out the acts of treason by conspiring to carrying out, and are causing to be carried out an armed attack upon the United States on September 11, 2001, as part of a false flag operation, they're all guilty of treason and can be prosecuted by an independent prosecutor. Now, in one of those quirks of fate, I should mention that on September 11, 1998, the U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee released a report by independent prosecutor Kenneth Starr, which eventually led to articles of impeachment against President William Jefferson Clinton under Article 2 of the Constitution. So, you know, the universe has a slight sense of humor. But be that as it may, we can get into at least five or six substantive reasons as to why there's hardcore prima facie evidence that the named individuals, Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, and other Jane and John Does, are independently and jointly guilty of treason. I don't know whether you want to get into that now, but the main instance is that we went forward and created this act, which the U.S. Congress should have done on its own and should have introduced in a heartbeat. And they didn't. So after the midterm election of November 7th, 2006, and you may recall that the extraterrestrials that themselves appeared to have taken a great interest in the midterm election of 2006 because it was on November 7th, 2006, the date of the midterm election, that at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, at United Airlines gate C-17, that at about 4:30 p.m., as a United Airlines flight was pulling away from the gate, a what's been described as up to 60 foot wide extraterrestrial craft came down upon gate C-17 and hovered just above the United Airlines airliner, was seen by a dozen of the ground crew of United Airlines, was seen by both of the pilots, air tower controllers were notified, as well as the FAA, so that there were multiple expert witnesses to this, highly trained witnesses in terms of aircraft personnel and pilots. And this was on midterm election day. It was the very day that the permanent war economy, the neocons, lost control of all three branches of government. They lost control of both houses of the U.S. Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives. And prior to that, things looked very bleak because the Military Commissions Act had just been passed, which designated American civilians as enemy combatants for the first time since the U.S. Civil War, and which authorized designating any American as a terrorist if, you know, they subscribe to a terrorist organization. And, you know, any organization could be designated as a terrorist organization under very loose criteria. So the extraterrestrials pointed to that, the midterm election of 2006, through the Chicago O'Hare sighting, and we're looking at that through the lens of a theorem called the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, and that holds that all UFO and extraterrestrial encounters, if they're genuine, if they're not alien reproduction craft, which are what the permanent war economy has generated to look like alien craft, are actually messages from a higher civilization, and these are actual symbolic communications from a higher civilization to our own, in the same way that a dream is a symbolic communication from one's subconscious mind to one's conscious mind, so that we can look at events like the Chicago O'Hare sighting on midterm election day as, gee, they're signaling midterm election day. We had a major North American sighting on U.S. midterm election day in Chicago, the premier American political city, on the very day that the neocons lost complete control of Congress. Now, how does that relate to 9/11? It relates following the midterm election. We then met with, set up meetings with, the incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, John Conyers, because the House Judiciary Committee would have jurisdiction over the 9/11 Independent Prosecutor Act to appoint an independent counsel to prosecute the President, Vice President, and Secretary of Defense for treason for the false flag operation of 9/11. And we had a 50-page memorandum to Congress written by a world expert on 9/11, and a copy of the act. We had multiple copies of those, gave them to the top-ranking assistant who took them to Congressman Conyers, Chairman John Conyers, personally took them to him in Detroit over the Thanksgiving 2006 holiday, and Chairman Conyers refused to consider introducing the act. So the way that citizens' tribunals come about is when the institutions of government, in this case the U.S. Congress, and of course the executive, had set up something called the 9/11 Commission, which was set up by the President, George W. Bush, which in turn took testimony from the two principal culprits in 9/11, Bush and Cheney. They took it in a private room, not under oath, at which no notes could be taken and there was no stenographer. So they lied through their teeth, according to the evidence. And so the 9/11 Commission reached fraudulent results. So when this happens, then, by precedent, going back to the original citizen tribunals, which occurred during the Vietnam War era under Lord Bertrand Russell, who was an eminent British philosopher who brought a citizen's tribunal for the war crimes being committed in Vietnam, which were then the international institutions, namely the World Court and the United Nations, all of which were controlled by the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization under the leadership of the Rockefellers, David Rockefeller, and the House and the City of London. The same parties that were involved in the Vietnam War were involved in the assassination of Kennedy and were involved in 9/11. It's this permanent war crimes racketeering organization, each of which has a net worth on the one hand of $100 trillion and on the other hand of $10 trillion. Well, I mean, it's so obvious.
Alfred, I'm so sorry to have to interrupt you. I have to look at the clock.
Yeah.
I'm going to take out just a moment to mention the guest on the program next month.
Great.
And then I hope that you will come back.
Oh, great.
Very, very soon. I have so many questions here on my list. We didn't even get into the exopolitics movement. And so I'm extending an invitation to you now to please come back soon.
Okay.
I want to mention that my guest, October 3rd, will be Cynthia Sloan. Cynthia is a remarkable telepathic intermediary who has given readings to people throughout the United States and in many foreign countries. she's also a deep channel or a trance medium for a highly evolved being called Alexor. You may want to read about Cynthia and Alexor on cynthiaslon.com. And please be sure to tune in October 3rd to meet Cynthia. Alfred, I was hoping that we could, I am just so grateful for everything that you have shared with us today. And I will be in touch with you by email to set up a time as soon as possible. Well, that would be November, is as soon as possible. And see if you can be on the program then. And we will continue with what you were talking about today and give updates.
Oh,
how
great.
About that?
Oh, great.
Okay. Thank you again so much for being with us today. And Matthew and I send love and peace to you and to all of our listeners.
Okay, then.
So, goodbye for now, and thank you again. I talk to